Well, we'll put this probably, I'll probably upload the show for tomorrow. So I'll go ahead and read your a little bit of your bio here. I've got George Green on the line at one time. He was a true insider, a member of the global elite, and was a very successful investment banker. His website is www.nohoax.com. He's worked at Edwards Air Force Base. He saw ion-powered dish-shaped crafts. He was involved with the X-15, the space plane, and I think we have a very much a mutual interest in the Billy Meyer information. I just wanted to let you know that right up front, George. So I really appreciate what you have to say on multiple different levels, and I just want to welcome you to the show. How are you this evening?
I'm good, and thank you for having me on. The public should know what's really happening.
Well, you know, when I first started listening to your material, it was stretching my consciousness. That's all I could say, because it was so amazing and it seemed so over the top at first. Can you kind of comment on that a bit?
Well, it happened to me at the same thing. You know, since you brought up the X-15 deal, you know, that one morning, I'll never forget this. This is the last week in August, and, you know, anyway, out at Edwards, it was 100 degrees, and, you know, in the morning. Anyway, they sent me out to do the post-flight inspection on the X-15, which is the forerunner of the space shuttle. Anyway, I did, which lands out in the desert. It's nothing more than a rocket on skids. Anyway, when I got through doing that, it was about 10 o'clock and it was 100 degrees. And they don't let you work out there in the desert when it's over that. But I had a Jeep and I had to put 25 miles a day on it. Now, the X-15 landed about, you know, five miles north of the main base. And so I just went out and I did the X-15, but there was a couple of hangars I hadn't been to, and I was cleared for top secret. So I just went into one of the hangars and here's this big disc. I said, well, I'm looking at it, but I've been working on a lot of, you know, the super secret things we had, but here was a round craft, and I'm 10 feet away from it. So anyway, I go back into my CO, and I ask him, I said, when can I work on that round craft? He says, you saw that? And he says, well, and that's an ion-powered craft designed by Sikorsky for use in outer space. And I says, well, great, when can I work on it? Now, you have to understand, this is 1958. People didn't even understand what ions were. So anyway, at the point, I says, he says, it's a civilian project. I can't work on it, so forget it. So anyway, I went back to, you know, to my room. Anyway, my buddy happened to be the base photographer. Now, it's 10 o'clock in the morning. A little later, we had anything better to do. And I says, get me some pictures of that craft. And he said, which one? I said, the round one. He said, what did they tell you? And he says, George, just follow me. So I went over to the photo lab, and I'm looking at pictures, you know. Now, first of all, I was 10 feet away from the craft, so I know they existed. I looked at the pictures, but what really got my attention was the two dead aliens. Mm-hmm. Now, they were similar to the ones that you see on the grays, you know, the small ones. Mm-hmm. But I didn't see them physically. I just saw the pictures that, you know, my buddy took. Mm-hmm. Well, now, but I'm also a little mad at that time. I mean, I was cleared for top secret. Why did my CO lie to me about that? So I went down and confronted him. And the first thing he did, of course, we spent the first half hour debriefing on my top secret clearance and what they can do to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that kind of, which makes sense. Anyway, he says, when the government's ready to tell the truth about UFOs and ETs, they will. Until then, I got to stick to the, in other words, if somebody else would happen to see the craft out there, it's the ion powered job. And, you know, during that time, people don't even realize back at that time, film from Kodak was all black and white. You know, things changed quite a bit just in the last few years, as you know. Well, anyway.
Let me throw a question here, if you don't mind. So if you saw an ion-powered disc in 1958 that we built, does that mean that the Apollo moon trips were just like a big dog and pony show?
It was a dog and pony show, but we didn't build that craft. That was an alien craft.
Oh, is that right?
But the ETs really ran the thing down. They were in contact with Eisenhower a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, before then. So, no, there was an ongoing thing going on that was happening at that point. So this was directly an ET craft, but the technology and stuff, because we had it, they shared it with us. And so what do you think's happening today? Everything that we have, that we think that we've created, is all out of alien technology.
Hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Wow. So I thought the 1958 craft was an ion-powered craft. Was it? Did you say it was ET, or was it built by Sikorsky? Or?
No, they told me, my CO to make it down, he said it was an ion-powered craft designed by Sikorsky for use in outer space. That was the story I was to use.
Oh, I see.
But
the cover
story. It was just a story, because when I went over with my buddy that was a base photographer, and he showed me pictures of the craft along with the two dead aliens, he says, he said it's an alien craft. Then I confronted with the CO, and my debriefing says, if anybody would see, and I'm to give them that story, it's ion powered. So, big deal. That's the way it was. But, at that time I was working on a lot of super secret things that they had at Edwards. Edwards had 25,000 people on the base at that time. Only 800 airmen. I was one of the airmen. Mm-hmm. All the rest of them were civilian contractors building the vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And the base is huge. You can't see it from any highway.
And so you worked on the X-15, you saw an alien craft, and they just had this cover story. And so how long were you at Edwards?
How long was I there?
Mm-hmm.
30 days later, they gave me orders transferring me to Japan because I'd worked on the F-104. That's a Starfighters, because they were having a skirmish, they said, at that time. And I was only one of the few people that had already worked on it.
Wow.
And, the F-104s, this was the fast jet that we had at that time. Mm-hmm. So I got transferred off the base almost immediately.
Goodness sake. Now, did you enjoy your time in Japan, or?
Well, when I got there, the skirmish didn't have anything to do, so they assigned me to Tachikawa, which is just a MAT squadron, and there wasn't anything better to do there. So I went to Toshibashi University in Tokyo. I was learning Japanese and how to interact with the Japanese. It was an interesting deal. But by that time, I had a couple of years in, and at that time, I had applied to Colorado School of Mines, which is the number one engineering school in the world at that time, in Golden, Colorado. And I was accepted. That's one of the very few places that you can get into, that's in the areas that I wanted to be. So anyway, the trouble is they wouldn't let me out of the Air Force, so I contacted my senator friend, and I said, get me out of this thing. And what happened is that they cross-trained me and put me, basically, I ended up in Chanute Air Force Base in Illinois. And at that time, I was working on the Hound Dog nuclear missiles. So for 2 years, I worked on the nuclear program on the nuclear missiles.
Mm.
Well, anyway, what happened then, I spent my 4 years in. I was still accepted at Mines. So I said I went out of the thing, but they extended my career. Because of my specialty, there was only a few of us in the Air Force with the training I had. So after 23 days over 4 years, I got an early out, believe it or not, and that was to go to Mines. And then, of course, I took up geophysics and that end of it. Now, when I was going to University of Illinois, back in Illinois when I was stationed there, I studied law and business. So I was going to school all the time. Frankly, I wasn't doing anything. I was learning what's going on in the world. Now, what happened when it comes back to the other thing, when I got out in the world of monopoly of making money, I became, pretty famous in that area. I created a lot of stuff that our country uses right now. I was asked to be the finance chairman for the next president of the United States 2 years before I became president. Well, as I'm running around in that area, one day I flew up to Aspen and had a private meeting with my buddies, and I'm walking in the guy's house. I'm sitting here looking at a book, UFO Contact from the Pleiades. Incredible color photographs of exactly the same thing I saw at Edwards 20-some years before.
Wow.
Well, you've seen the pictures.
Of course.
Anyway, I'm looking at those pictures, and I say, wait. somebody out here is printing these books on this stuff. I want one of those books. So I looked, I found out who did the publishing, and I flew down to Phoenix and I talked to this couple. They say they were investigating a man in Switzerland who claimed to be in contact with the beings from the star system, the Pleiades, who said they engineered this planet for 500 million people. Now, when I say that, a lot of this details I'd already got from the service and other things that I was, you know, the studies that I had. So I knew a bunch of it was true. But here I'm looking at that picture book, which was exactly the same thing. And I said, I got to have one. And they said, well, we don't have any, but we'd like to print a volume too. And I says, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll loan you all the money to publish your next one. The only requirement I have is I don't want anybody to know about it. You publish the book, and then when you get through, give me my money back, and I'll go on it. Because at that time, I was in banking and real estate developing. I was building all over the country, you know, shopping centers, office buildings, you know, motels, all kinds of stuff. At any rate, after 90 days, they sent me the accounting. I'd received three times the amount of money I gave them, but there was no check. So I called them on the phone. I said, where's my money? And they said, well, we found out who you are. You don't need it.
What?
I was really... That's true.
That's incredible. Now, is this Lee and Britt Elders you're speaking?
That's
of?
Right. That's right. Uh-huh.
Wow.
So I filed suit. Against them.
I don't blame you.
Meanwhile, as I did that, I said I grabbed the next plane and I flew off to Switzerland just to find out for myself. So my wife and I get over there. You know, we're in the car in Zurich. It's about a 45-minute drive up to Billy's place. Anyway, I get out to Hendersmith Rudy. I'm knocking on the door, and this young lady come to the door, and I said, I got to talk to Billy. And she says, we're not talking to Americans. And I said, why not? And she said, well, they're all crooks. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, they come over and take all of our pictures and all of our material, and they promise to help us, and nobody's done anything. I said, look, the buck stops here. Let me go talk to Billy. And, you know, and then we're going to see about it, because I think the world should know about UFOs and ETs. She came back 10 minutes later and said, Mr. Green, I'm sorry. Shirley McLean was here 2 months ago, and she promised to help us, and nothing has happened. And I said, well, I don't know. I'll talk to him. It was late in the afternoon. I talked to my wife, and I said, let's just go get a hotel, and then let's head off to Innsbruck and make a vacation out of this thing. Anyway, next morning, knocking on my door was Bruni. Handed me a two-page message from Quetzal, the Pleiadian commander, with my name on it, and said they wanted me to come over there, and then I would be their next contact. Now, I have this all in writing, just so you know.
Really?
Anyway, we come back over, and frankly, the next week, I got my mind blown. Everything I thought I knew, basically on a lie, or how the guys manipulate us around and tell us all this stuff. So
did you get to speak to Billy after all this?
Oh, sure. I was with Billy, and Billy, yeah, we ran around. In fact, I was with Billy, and I'm sitting here. I went out in the morning, and I went over and checked the neighbor, the farmer, if he saw anything strange. And he says, yeah, I have. He says, come on with me. I come around, and he showed me huge footprints in the mud. He was out milking his cow.
Wow.
And he says, there was a guy here 7 meters tall. I can saw the footprints. I didn't see the guy, but I saw the footprints, so I was all excited. I kept running. I come back to the house with Billy, and I said, Billy, there's a guy seven. And Billy just shrugged his shoulders because he, you know, he knows all this. But he says, come on with me. And he took me in the back room, and he had made plaster casts of little tiny people. He says, don't you know the story, leprechauns and fairies? In other words, there's all kinds of sizes and shapes that are visiting us.
Wow.
Well, during this period, Billy... You know, I have a lot of direct information. Then, when I was there, the Pleiadians were there, but also the Umos showed up. Now, they're from, most of them were in contact with people over in Spain.
Right.
You know, Dr. Antonio Rivera. I flew over and talked to him later. But anyway, the pictures, I got pictures of everything we're talking about, you know, just to give you an idea.
Any pictures of those giant footprints?
No, I didn't do that. I didn't have it with me. And remember, it's just one of those things is a coincidence. I was a real estate developer and a banker. I wasn't involved getting over these things. I just thought I'd help the guy out. I didn't want anybody to know what I was doing, frankly. Wow. I was just experimenting to see what was going on.
Sure.
Well, then that's when I found out. And frankly, from that point on, my life has changed. It just, because what we have now is how do we awaken people up to who and what we are and what we come from. And then, of course, I was running around with the people that are running our country, yeah. You know, that really control Congress and that. So I had a whole different view of what's happening in the United States. And I mean, when they asked me to be the finance chairman for the next president, I sat in on the meetings what they had planned for the United States. I mean, it upset me very. Well, it made me so mad because during that same period of time, they asked me to build an enemy prisoner of war camp in downtown Las Vegas.
Wow.
It says right on the contract, enemy prisoner of war camp. Well, my friend at that time, I ran around in unique circles. Ted Gunderson was a former head of the FBI. You're probably aware of him.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause Ted and I were buddies, and I gave him a copy of the contract, and he came back a couple days later, and he said, George, they're building them all over the country, only they're changed the name. To FEMA camps.
Right.
Did I fill that in for you? Now, the plan, because I sat into it, the plan 2000, Jimmy Carter was to get that going. Did you ever read the Georgia Guidestones on the internet?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's basically the plan 2000. Mm. I sat in on the meetings, and I wouldn't have anything to do with it. That's wiping out, as you know, most of it. Well, they're way behind schedule because, as Kissinger said, they were still increasing 250,000 a day on the planet, as you and I speak. And we're according to the ETs, the last thing I got from them, there's 8.3 billion people on the planet that was engineered originally for 500 million.
It's a crisis. It's really a crisis.
Well, the crisis is even worse than that because of the economic thing. Now, I help because of my game of money. I don't know if I should tell you the whole story about it, but my dad was in the meatpacking business in Denver, with the third largest meatpacker there. You know, we could go out and buy 100 head of cattle. You got to pay for them in 24 hours. That's the Packers and Stockyards Act. Mm-hmm. Well, my dad would process the animals and then sell it to the government under the school lunch programs and other military things. Anyway, he was so big, we had all kinds of government receivables, so they never paid us the same day. You know, they always took like 2 or 3 months to get our money. Hmm. So my job was to go to the banks and borrow against my government receivables, which was a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
But banks have loan limits based on their deposits. You're aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, a bank, if somebody, they have $5 million, they can loan out 10 times that. They can put out $50 million. Anyway, I had borrowed almost the limit on every bank in Denver, and one day the president of one of the banks says, George, you got a lot of friends with money. Why don't you have them put them in our bank? And I says, let me look at your books. And I looked at the books over, and I said, oh, I got a way for both of us to come out of this, and I can make some money, and we can make some money. And I said, right now you're putting full-page ads in the Denver Post and the Rocky Mountain News. He said, right. And I says, and that's to put in $10,000 and you'll pay him 5% on a one-year certificate. He says, that's right. And I said, I also see that it's costing you about 3% in advertising. And they said, that's correct. I said, pay me the 3% and I'll get you all the money you want. And he says, how are you going to do that? I says, you just give it to me. What I did was call all my friends up, and I wrote a check out to them for 2% in advance. So I just told them what bank to put their $10,000 in. Well, at that time, they got 5% CD, you know, a one-year CD. And then I gave them two, so I gave them a 40% increase on their money without any risk whatsoever. Pretty good, huh?
Sure.
Well, except for you were a loudmouth, you told all your friends, and everybody was sending me money. Well, the banker was happy, too, because how do you get money? He told his fellow bankers. So I had banks and people from all over the country sending me money all over the place. In fact, they sent me an extra $1 million one day. I still have it. The feds came over to the office, and they wanted their money back, and I said, fine, I signed a paper. Anyway, they gave me a reward, and that was 16th century Siamese coins in a little cube. It's a little side cube. That's for giving back $1 million to the Federal Reserve.
Hmm.
Well, I'm still in the same boat. I have nothing to do with the banks. I have nothing to do with anything else. I just have a lot of friends out here. Wow. The problem is, at the end of 1 year, because the bank had loaned, for instance, that $5 million, they put out $50 million based on that deposit. When your certificate came up for renewal, who did you call? Me. Because you wanted to get that bonus again, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't, if the bank wouldn't pay me again to get you, I just had you move the money to another bank. So I could break a bank.
That's pretty powerful. Yeah, that's a lot of power.
Well, then the next step happened. Then the Federal Reserve notified the state of Colorado to give me license. And I said, bring it on. And I love exams, you know, hell, I studied law and business and all these things. I go from there. Anyway, they didn't know what to do because they never had this requirement. And I said, well, it's an easy, there's a solution to all this stuff. I said, I'll check with my senator, Peter Dominick. I said, I'll get the accounting book for the IMF and the World Bank. So I got them. They don't have a definition of money. So how can you license me on something they don't have a definition for, right?
Hmm.
So what I did was I told the state, I said, okay, now what are you going to do? And they said, I don't know. So what happens, the feds turned it around and they sent a letter to every bank in the United States not to do business with me. But it opened up the Pandora's box because of savings and loans. Remember those?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they needed the money. So Jane Shaler, that was the president of U.S. Life Savings Loan in Los Angeles, called me. She says, can you do this? Can you help us? And I did. And I went out. And I looked over and I said, Jane, I got a better solution for you. I said, we're going to put together, at that time, because of what the state did, they required me to get licensed. And I said it was a security. So I became a registered financial principal and a broker dealer and a securities underwriter, which I found out, which is another lie. Everybody out here think they have money in the market. Well, they're not going to get anything. This whole thing's coming apart. Anyway, what happened with Jane, I went out there and looked, and I said, I have a better deal. I said, I'm going to pool 1,000 mortgages together. In other words, but the only problem is, as an underwriter, I have to determine the value. Well, 1,000 mortgages are different interest rate, different payment dates, and all that kind of stuff. So when I flew to my office in New York at that time. I got out there with my buddies and we're having lunch. I said, I got a new project we're going to do. It's, you know, it's derived off of income, but we want to set it up. And I says, what I need to do is I'm going to put together a new instrument that you guys can sell and we can sell, but I got to figure a way to determine the value. And one of the guys raises his hand up and he says, we can both make money. Let us help you. And so we entered into a deal and he said, we'll insure. So insure the packages. So a derivative called derived off of or a derivative is what we made. That was the first of the derivatives. And that spread like wildfire in New York City. So all the brokers up there put all kinds of projects in and sold all these debts to foreign governments and everything. And the derivative has no voting rights, has no nothing. All it is a piece of paper that says you may have a collection at some point. You understand? And that's what we're looking at now. And New York is about $300 trillion in debt if there's such an animal.
Are you saying you invented the derivative?
Sure.
Wow.
I just told you how I did it.
That's amazing. What year was that? Do you remember?
Oh, God. That was back in the early 60s.
Oh, goodness.
See, because I can remember I'm just playing a game of money at that time. I was just a money broker, the only one in the country. In fact, the state gave me a license. I was the only person in the United States that had a license to sell money. Today, what is money to you? That's a debit card, right? Well, then I got involved with the people that found me because I became so powerful and running around in the circles like that. I had a private meeting I went into up in Aspen. I walked in the room and I said, what am I here for? And they said, we would like you to be the finance chairman for the next president. I said, president of what? And they said, president of the United States. And I said, why me? And they said, well, we owe you a favor. And I said, but I just started this $100 million project, which I just did. And they said, well, we'll put it on ice. And I said, for 2 years, this is 2 years before he became president. And I said, well, I have to think about this. I mean, the week before I was with Bill Levitt. Do you know Bill Levitt? Levittown, Pennsylvania, Levittown, New York.
No, I've heard of
anyway, that. Yeah, well, anyway, he and I were discussing building cities because that's basically what I was getting ready to do. Anyway, what happened here from that point on, I said, I got a couple things on it. You know, my ego's on the line because I was totally independent from anybody. And I said, who's going to be the next president? And they said, Jimmy Carter. And I said, Jimmy who? And they said, well, he's the Democratic governor of Georgia. And I said, I've been voting Republican. And Paul Volcker was there. He walks over and he says, son, don't worry about it. We control them both.
So let me throw a question in here. So the elite, they control the Republicans and Democrats. So are you saying that both Trump and Hillary have, quote-unquote, been approved by the elite?
Oh, yeah, that's right. They're well, I don't even consider them elite. Let's put it this way. The game of money is what controls everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you, if you go to Washington, D.C., you ever been to the White House?
No.
If you go to the White House, it's right across the street from the park, but you sit down in the first building on the left, which is connected to the White House, is the West Wing.
Mm-hmm.
The whole next block is the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is a private bank. Has nothing to do with our government. The next block is the FBI, Internal Revenue Service, the collection agency for the Federal Reserve.
Mm.
This whole game is a big monopoly game. That's all I'm telling you. But somebody else owns the game. That's all. The people behind the scene are in some of these secret societies, and I'm not going to put their names out on the air, but I went with them. I mean, I was with one of them. He says, "Come on with me, let's go have lunch." So I go have lunch with him, with the governor of Colorado, and the governor's sitting there, and he says, "I'm glad I'm finishing my tour." He says, "I got my ticket," and I said, "Ticket to what?" And they said, "To the underground facilities in Australia." And I said, "Well, that's all about." And of course, are you aware of that?
No, I don't know. Please tell us about that. No, I don't know much.
Well, Pine Gap is for 35,000 of the so-called elite, because when they get the war started in the Northern Hemisphere, everything, all bets are off. In other words, where are you going to live? So 35,000 of the so-called elite are in the underground facilities in Pine Gap, Australia. Now, you can look it up. It's on the internet and all this stuff. The only trouble is they're behind schedule.
I have heard about Pine Gap. Are they still planning on starting World War III?
Yes.
Gosh.
There's no way the planet cannot continue what we're doing right now. We don't have the resources for doing it. It's just, and the game of monopoly is coming apart real quick. I don't know if you're aware of this, the fiscal year of the United States government is September 30th. Well, all of our debt are supposed to be paid every year, on that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what they did, they just got to extending it to December 15th, if you remember. In other words, the fiscal debt has continued on, and they won't tell the people. They haven't done anything for it for a few years anyway. We just keep going deeper in debt with the dollar. I flew to I was connected with the leaders in Beijing. I was over there with them, and they said it's 5,000 years, it's our turn to run the world.
Now, Beijing has like 14 million people or something like that?
Yeah, just in the city, but there's 1.3 billion people in China, and you have no idea what a billion people are until you walk among them.
Well, I've heard that Beijing has like 52 lanes of traffic that circle the city there, something like
that. That's right.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I was there before all that happened. I was invited over there to a private meeting. My ex-wife's stepmother was Chinese, and her sister was on the board of governors in Hong Kong. Hong Kong is a separate entity. You're probably aware of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, they invited me over to be with her, so I did. But she was invited to go up to Beijing for a meeting trying to work on the stuff to get, Hong Kong and China all together, opening up everything, So for a month, I was a guest of the government of China, ran all over the place to see what was happening. And, I mean, most of China at that time had one clothes on. They had the technology that they were doing in behind, and they've since then, it's just amazing what they've done. And you're right. In fact, I was with some of the builders in Beijing and telling them how they made a mistake, because I did some. It just hadn't been going that way. But you have no idea how many people now, since they took off the limited, before they told them they couldn't have any kids, and now they're allowing them to have kids.
Oh, they are.
But that's right. And meanwhile, China's in a financial position. I mean, basically they control the planet, and they're buying all the natural resources and everything. I mean, and they own the oil up in Canada, Chile, they own the copper. They got everything going. And just about everything is either financed by them or building it, at this point, on all the goods. Anyway, when I was with the leaders over there, they just told me their last comment, which I'll never forget. They said, it's 5,000 years, it's our turn to run the world.
I have heard that the air pollution is so bad in Beijing that it almost appears like the evening during the middle of the day. It's like
I just talked to my son, who's a nuclear physicist and a senior engineer, and he's over in the Far East right now. He says that that's the number one city in the world of pollution.
Yeah.
In other words, it's the worst place in the whole world right now.
So, in your opinion, we're still going to have this nuclear war. Are you currently still in North America?
I'm here in North America. A lot of my friends and stuff that I have, and I'm friends all over with this stuff. I know that the safest places are going to be out of this country, because the United States, according to the details under the Plan 2000 that Jimmy Carter set down, they want to reduce the population in the United States down to less than 20 million.
Wow.
Now, that quote, that's by all means necessary. In other words, whatever is happening. Well, I just got another word. I just had some other of my friends that are working on projects to try to offset some things. You ever read the book One Second After?
No.
Well, you ought to get it. One Second After, they have the ability to put out an EMP wave that will shut everything down with a chip in it for the whole country.
And that would be
one. And Newt Gingrich did the foreword on the book to give you an idea. It's a real book and it's a real thing. It's basically a setup. Meanwhile, the people who are calling me today, they have some other things to try to set up for people so you can be able to offset it, because people aren't going to have any power. The car won't run. Nothing's going to be running.
Right. Credit card won't work, probably.
Nothing. Not only that, what is a credit card based on money? What's money? None of the foreign, you can't take dollars out of the country anymore. You know, it's just getting crazy. Chase just made it, Chase has got some deals. You can get a special card from them to go to other countries, but you can't take dollars to Europe right now. I mean, they'll still take them into UK, but they won't take them anyplace else.
So do you think the dollar?
You can even go to Canada. Canada won't take $100 anymore. No, we're so far in debt, they're worthless.
Are they worthless already? Okay.
Yeah, it's a worthless deal. What's it behind? Debt. They won't tell you what the debt is, and then you divide it among the 320 million people we have in the country. Theoretically, every one of us are in debt. Theoretically, you know.
Right.
We're just in the point. How do you do it? They're telling you we're hiring new people right now, but they tell you it's all the worker bees out here. They're getting paid $6 an hour or $7 an hour. This is just to keep the illusion going. We're in big trouble.
Have you met Donald Trump?
No.
Did you?
No, but he was kind of like, I was kind of like he was, running around playing the big game. But Don, I think he doesn't know what he's into, frankly. I think he's out doing, he built all over the world and did all of his stuff, playing the game. And basically, I was playing the same game. But politics is two words. Poly means many, many, and ticks are bloodsuckers.
Did you ever meet the Clintons when you were?
No.
Okay.
No, I never. I got involved indirectly with the Clinton situation. The Clintons were running the drug stuff in for Bushes. Did you know that?
In Mena, Arkansas?
Hillary. If you pull up the book on Hillary Rodham, Hillary Rodham. She was, my friend was the chief prosecutor for the impeachment of Nixon, and Hillary worked for him, and he fired her because of her being a crook.
Yeah.
And he wrote a book on it, Without Honor.
Wow. There's a book called Clinton's War on Women by Roger Stone. It's pretty good. I've read that one.
I haven't, but it's a different category. When I got involved with the people, you go to Washington and some of these other ones, it's the old thing. Well, I used to be partners with the guys that own Studio 54 in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that?
Not real familiar, no.
Well, it's one of the things. It's just a personality thing. Absolute power corrupts absolutely, right?
Yes.
Women love power, so they get migrated up to the very top.
Mm.
In other words, that's what you get, whatever way you want to look at it, that's just what happens.
Mm.
when it come to Hillary, she was, of course, studying her things on it, you know, for that material. Henry Gonzalez, a former secretary treasurer of ours, called me on the phone. He says, I'm running down $50 million that Hillary got. I says, for what? She says, well, that was her fee representing the largest drug dealer in the country. And the money was transferred from Rose Law Firm to Continental Bank in Chicago. Well, I told Henry, I said, I'll run it down. What are you going to do it? So anyway, 5 days before that bank went into bankruptcy, 5 days it was transferred to BCCI, the $50 million. So then I went back down the other, we went down to BCCI, and it went into bankruptcy, and 5 days before it went, the money headed off to Switzerland. So she's got it hidden.
Hmm. So how is it that Hillary has not been convicted?
Look, it's a game. Well, it isn't a question of being convicted. It's a question of the laws. There's 10,000 new laws being printed every year, and they don't have any of the judges. And the judges only get in there because they're bought and paid for.
Oh, yeah.
You have very few judges that I would consider legitimate. I have one of them's a friend of mine. He says, I quit being a, you know, public judge. He says, the only thing is I stayed as a judge, but only a juvenile judge. He said, the rest of it's so corrupt.
Wasn't Judge Scalia, I think his name was, that was murdered?
Yeah.
He
there's a lot of them that were murdered, frankly. One of the CIA was another associate that came around me because I got a couple of CIA guys, one of them in charge of all the drugs coming in from Latin America. And he's in Latin America right now. But anyway, he was bringing up the drugs and stuff for the same deal. But meanwhile, we got other people that are involved in it. You start getting your murder and all the rest of this stuff, you open up a Pandora's box because there was my one friend, you know, he assassinated 130 people. He killed three of the five shooters that did Clinton in. I mean,
Kennedy.
Kennedy, yeah. There was five shooters on that.
Now, you knew
and
this
three.
Guy? You knew
that? Oh, yeah, I've got all the details on it.
Oh,
I got everything.
Goodness sakes. So how did you get to know this person?
Well, it's people came to me because I'm honest and I don't have any. I'm not hiding anything. I'm not out here to make any money or do anything. I'm just trying to wake people up so they can get prepared. It's like somebody that has money in a pension fund or something. Get it out now. According to the World Encyclopedia, the International Monetary Fund, the only real money throughout the world is gold, because that's what they use between countries. So I'm suggesting number two, or best thing right now, is get 3 months' worth of small bills, ones, five, tens, and twenties, nothing more than that, because they're going to call a national emergency. Now, I sat in on the meetings. It's already there. What they're going to call a national emergency, and you're going to go to the post office, and you're going to get the new photo ID. The new photo ID will be linked with everything about you, but it'll be your passport to give you the new digit of whatever we're going to have for money.
When do you think?
Because our money is worthless. Our dollar is going to go away totally.
Now, do you think this will happen in 5 years, 10 years, or next?
Could
week?
Be in 90 days. That's what I'm looking at. Well, look at what China just got there doing. Made a deal with Russia. They're not going to take the dollar. They will not allow the dollar to buy Chinese. Is that telling you something?
Sure.
China has over 100 million men army.
That's huge.
You have no idea about what's going on. They're way advanced on everything else. Our system of, you know, of information and news is so phony, you don't know what's real or not. My advantage that I've had, I've flown to these places and I've met most of them up here at the top.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different game. And I'm on a radio because I want you and other people. Well, you watch my videos and everything. I show pictures of what? The ET craft and everything else. Hell, I was there next to it.
Yeah.
And the ET, I'm still involved with the ETs because my agreement with them is try to waken up people and give them a solution to it. And a part of that is, the first book that I published for the ETs called The Handbook for the New Paradigm, which is a free download off of my internet. You know, just go to nohoax.com and read the Handbook for the New Paradigm. It's written by the ETs. I'm their publisher, but I'm not the author.
Do they contact you telepathically, or?
Always telepathically. Like on my last message that I got, it was telepathic, and it kind of, you know, they wake me up in the middle of the night, what they want to do, and they're making a difference. But what they said, there's too few of the people on the planet waking up now to make any significant difference. And they're urging all of us to get together with other people of like minds to support each other in the days ahead. And then we're ending a 26,000-year cycle. So expect major earthquakes, major winds, everything all over the planet. When I was with Billy, I saw pictures of San Francisco destroyed. You know, the ETs, you know, the Pleiadians took them forward in time, and they took pictures of San Francisco from an earthquake. Well, if the earthquake's going to occur, that's, in other words, it's before the war. Well, my information, I just got through talking to people overseas. This war can be going within a week or two. You just don't know. Everything is so created. It's like Israel, you know. The Plan 2000 called for a war to get started in the Middle East. What do you think Jimmy Carter did? He hit Iraq, right? Well, when I sit down in the meetings, they say we're going to hit Israel with a nuclear bomb. That's to begin World War III. All the major cities are on the East Coast are going to be gone.
That's so staggering. It's just hard to wrap your mind around that. There are other people saying this kind of thing. You're not the only one.
I happen to be one of them that sat in on the meetings as they were planning them. That's all.
Can you tell us a little bit about how those meetings went and what you were feeling at the time when you were listening?
Well, I'll give you a direct one, right? When I walked into that room, when they asked me to be the finance chairman, when I asked who's going to be the next president, and they said Jimmy Carter, and I said, I never had that. Well, my next question I had is, what the hell does a finance chairman do?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, you sat down with Ted. So I'm with Ted, some guy named Ted Kennedy. You've heard of him.
Sure.
Anyway, I'm sitting with Ted, and Ted says, George, you're really good with money. We're going to send you out to all the state Democratic functions. You're going to meet some real foxy ladies. Well, just coincidentally, you know, my daughter was up skiing. This is up in Aspen. She walked in, and Ted looks at her across the room, and he said, wow, I got to go to bed with that. And I said, no, you don't, Ted. That's my daughter, and she's 14. And his response back to me is, I don't care. I was so livid. I didn't say another word. I got up. I walked across the room. I'm with Pierre Trudeau and his wife. You knew who that was. You know, the Prime Minister of Canada. Pierre and I were doing okay talking, but I'm sitting back looking at Ted. You know how they think. I just couldn't believe that he would sit down there and do that. I mean, you know, his ego on the line. But then I'm looking at Pierre's wife right next door, you know, in the next seat over, and there was a little half cigar box full of white powder. I'm sitting, oh, my God, if the world leaders have to resort to this, because it was cocaine.
Sure.
And I'm sitting here looking around the other one, and I said, look, this is on a Friday. I said, guys, I don't know if I want to do this because, you know, I was going to build a city, and I was real happy with what I was doing. But I did agree to set in over the weekend on the Plan 2000. That was the organization to get the world's population back down to, as you know, manageable level with the ETs originally engineered the planet for, which 500 million.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I sat in the meetings what they had planned, and it's like Kissinger said, we're increasing it by, you know, 250,000 a day, and they're going to get a war started in the Middle East. They all to follow the biblical prophecies, because people on a religion, they'll fall like sheep to slaughter. They'll do, well, it's written down, so it must be true.
Right, right.
But all of that's a hoax, everything. Religion happens to be the opiate of the masses. They all had their different opinions. Now, when I was with Billy, Billy was taken with a Greek priest to a tomb wrapped in resin. Was the original writings of Judas Iscariot. That was ascribed to Christ. I got a copy of those. We had a college kid translate it. It went from, the Aramaic. We had it translated, however, into... It was in Swissy Deutsch or High German, how the Greek priest did, and then we had it translated into English. And then I ended up taking that back to the United States, but before we'd print it, I wanted to get some verification on it. So My wife, we sent a copy of it to Dr. Jim Deardorff. You're aware of him.
Oh, yeah, I've been interviewed him.
Well, Deardorff, that's where he got it from, us originally. And he said, I'm going to disprove it. He ended up proving the document was real.
Yeah. It's amazing.
And of course, we ended up publishing it. And Billy was all upset about all this thing because one of the things that I did not want to do, I said I'd agree to publish the book, The Talmud of Emmanuel, mm-hmm. but I wasn't going to put the German on the side because of the translation. And he was real mad. So I did it anyway. I mean, you can go to Amazon, you can pull it up there, and it's without the German. Because in Swissy Deutsch or High German, how are you going to do translations? I mean, you have to bless Jim Deardorff for all the time and thing. Well, he ended up proving the document.
Mm-hmm. All of Billy's books, they have the German on the left page and the English on the right.
I know.
Page. Yeah, yeah.
I know. Well, not all of them, because Wendell Stevens was a friend. I ended up financing Wendell Stevens and all of his books, and he did his own publishing. Yeah, I financed it. Yeah.
That's awesome. So you knew Wendell Stevens pretty well.
Oh, very close. Are you kidding? I was down there with him. We were sitting there discussing a bunch of that stuff. You know, when he ended up at the end, all that interconnected between Lee and Wendell, all the rest of that. But no, I financed that too.
So you were the financial backing for a lot of the money.
That's right.
That's awesome.
That's right. But I never wanted to make any money on it. I was just doing it to get the word out.
Right.
All I did was I just put the money up to get it out there, so I didn't get involved. Well, it turned out, you know, and I've got all the documents. I got a bunch of them too that I got from Billy. But then I became in direct contact with the ETs myself.
Hmm.
So that opened up another Pandora's box, right?
Sure.
How do you get it to the people? Because everybody wants to be in contact. Well, if they read our first book, The Handbook for the New Paradigm, it gives everybody instructions on how they can be in direct contact. How's that for a plan? And it's a free download off of my website, nohoax.com.
Yeah, I think I did download that before. I haven't read it in a while. I'll have to read it again.
Reread it. Remember the little prayer? I'm a human becoming, help me become.
Yes.
That gives them permission to communicate with you. But there's other things to it, as you know. But you read the next two volumes, you know, Embracing the Rainbow and Becoming. It goes into, the second one goes into great details on the extraterrestrials and that. And the same thing with the third book. So all three of them I recommend people reading. But then you start looking at, now from, you know, I went to School of Mines. From hell, our backyard was, Denver was a seaport. So we had all the fossils and everything else from way back. And then we got fossil people. They don't even talk to you about that, as you know.
Say that again. What was that?
People. We got fossil remains of people who are, you know, a couple million years old. Oh. This planet's always been used for this. So it's a different game.
So is that related to Earth being a prison planet?
Yes.
Can you explain that?
Sure. Planet Earth was engineered to take 500 million people originally. In other words, that was like us. When we go out and do engineer some property, or we go to an island or something, we can say we can do that. The only trouble is there's a lot of planets that are inhabited with, quote, humanoid that look like us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Planet Earth, the original, this time around, the blacks were sent to Africa to mine the gold. Then they decided there's enough to do other ones. So other planets would send, basically, we're the Australia, if you want to call it. They're the outback of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So all the different races come from a different star system. So when they tell you they come from, you know, Zeta Reticuli or what are all these things, there's evidence on each one of the races when you start looking up all of their research on them, and then you find out the truth of all of it. Now, all of it's out here throughout the world, but the religion is covered up so much of it because they, you know, supposedly have somebody coming out here. Now, when it came to Emmanuel, you know, in the Talmud of Emmanuel and that, that opened up the Pandora's box because, frankly, we became in direct contact with them, and we ended up publishing another book called The Spiritual Laws and Lessons of the Universe, which they go into the universal laws to stay in balance. But planet Earth is basically their prison planet.
But typically, on a planet, you would not see this many different races then, right?
That's right, you wouldn't.
So the people.
The hope was from the ETs. The hope was that we would interbreed and breed out all this stuff, but instead, it all kind of everybody stayed together. In other words, the Chinese and the Koreans and all these different ones would say, and they're still, you know, private groups in Brazil, South America, or down. You know, it was funny. I was down in the outback, down in Australia, and a little Aborigine came up to me, and we're out in the middle of nowhere, you know, out there. And he said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "I'm just exploring the world." That's what, which I was. I had my two buddies with me. And he says, "Are you a missionary?" I says, "No." He says, "Oh, good." And I said, "Why?" And he said, turned around and he pointed up. And he said, "You see that?" He said, "That's my God." He says, "I can live without your God. You can't live without mine." He was pointing at the sun.
Right.
And I turned around to my buddies and I says, "Yeah, listen to this guy." And I turned around and he disappeared. So I don't know. It was kind of, you know, I can't tell you what happened. He was there and then he wasn't. But I've had a lot of these experiences now where the ETs have brought me into connection with people. Seriously, you know, in connection with people specifically for some kind. It's just like I was on the phone, like talking to you right now. Mm-hmm. I was talking to one of the guys inside the Pentagon. And he was talking to me, and all of a sudden I heard a loud explosion. And he says, "Hold on." Anyway, he come back over, and he says, "We just got hit by a missile." I was on the phone. I heard it.
Seriously?
That's very seriously.
That's amazing. What an experience.
But then it was a missile. And he come back, and he said they didn't have any damage over there because they were remodeling that section of the Pentagon.
That's
interesting, right?
What a coincidence, quote unquote, right?
Well, I think about that because I've had many cases like that where I've introduced to people, you know, say for this thing, but they were brought to me for some reason. You know, they just come, all of a sudden there's something, looks like you calling me. You want to get the information out to certain people.
Sure.
You want to wake people up so they can get me. I'm out now trying to wake people up to get prepared. And forget the game of money, it's gone. But you do want to have something you can trade. So that's what. But also, they're making so many regulations and everything. Then people can get a hold of me. I'll try to help them out and walk them through. I don't charge anything.
Hmm. That's great.
Because we've been playing the money game all along, and we make it all. You know, this is a year right now we put everybody for Christmas, right? Where's all the Christmas stuff made? Probably China.
Hmm. That's probably true. I hadn't thought of it that way.
That's right.
Man.
Isn't this right? Well, so we're being manipulated, and the small group of people that really manipulate everything are just sitting back watching all this stuff, and it's not that they 100% correct all the time. They make some mistakes, like they're way behind schedule. I mean, when they're going after Iraq, that was supposed to begin World War III.
So are the banks in control of the world then?
No, China's central system is. They control, they and Russia, they both, you know, they're totally off of our system.
Hmm.
So when you talk about banks that are under our, well, the Federal Reserve System interacts with other people and we have trade going on. It's like Costa Rica. You go down there, they're on the Colona and the dollar. And Panama's on the dollar, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
Ecuador had the dollar, but they kicked it out. I mean, they're still on the dollar, but they got rid of the Federal Reserve. So you have a lot of things that are happening. All the rest of the countries down there are some kind of their own currencies that they're playing. Well, you can't. I just come back from Europe, and over there, I was sitting there looking at what's going on and how they're playing the game. Again, it's all back to the little plastic card. Well, that was part of the meeting that they said, put everybody on a debit card.
Are you still in contact with Billy at all?
No. No, he's kind of dropped out of everybody. You know, his kids were over here for a while. I did talk to them, but no.
Hmm.
Billy, he and I are about the same age, frankly, so we're in the same thing. But he's, you know, living his thing on it, and I'm living my stuff on it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to get prepared. You know, myself, I have a son that's, or he's a nuclear physicist and a senior engineer with Bechtel, and they got him running around the world on these huge $1 billion projects, you know. But he's also concerned. Then we got notice Another friend just called me a couple hours ago, and he said, I need to talk to you tomorrow because it looks like they're going to do that 1 second after deal. And he said, we want to try to prevent it. In other words, the 1 second after putting down an EMP wave. Well, North Korea has that ability right now.
Hmm.
We keep talking about it. Our military is the lowest we've ever had. It's not that we don't have the vehicles to be able to do stuff, but a lot of other countries, they don't. Our military does not know what China has.
I think we're in big trouble in terms of our military. I think the F-35 is really not that good of a plane, and I don't think the F-22 is either, and I think we spent a lot of money on systems that aren't as good as we think they are. But that's just my
take. Well, that's exactly what the people are talking about right now. The satellites and stuff that we have are so set up, all they have to do is an EMP wave.
Mm-hmm.
But that can be done by North Korea, or can be done by China. It can be done by Japan. It can do a lot of them. Japan's in major trouble because of, you know, the nuclear stuff over there. That's all. And our radiation, what we've killed off the ocean all over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I was in Panama just a couple of months ago, the ocean is 5 degrees hotter. You know what's happening, and all the oceans, of course, go to both poles, and both of the poles are melting right now. I own coffee farms in Costa Rica, and the temperature has raised up so much that the coffee's not as good as it used to be. It used to be, you know, I was president of the Terrazu Coffee Association, because the Terrazu Coffee was number one in Europe, but it's all gone now. We don't even bother. You only collect coffee 1 week a year anyway, but it's just one of these games.
So is coffee healthy? What are your thoughts on coffee?
Sure. Oh, coffee? No, it's healthy. You know, it's like anything else. It does keep you going on certain things on it. You know, coffee, tea is probably the biggest thing in the world that helps. But what do you look at? Most of our genetically modified food is just setting up for people to come down with diseases.
Yeah, that's a whole big ball of wax there. The whole medical thing and that whole thing. So do you think we're going to escape from this nuclear war? Or do you think it's a for sure?
No. Oh, it's a for sure.
Golly.
I'll give you, this is another one. You remember George McGovern?
Yes.
Well, his wife's a friend of mine, and guess where she's at?
She's out of the country.
In Australia. Yeah, well, because the... Well, right now. Just talk to her. Anyway, what I'm looking at, let's be logical about that. We have Earth, you know, you go to the North Pole and the South Pole, the wind directions are totally different. You go down to Ecuador, you go right down there to Ecuador, you can go down, there's a place in Quito, which is the capital, and you sit down there, they've got a big building. On one side of the building, the water's running in one circle, and you go down the other side of the building, and it's in the reverse.
That's amazing.
So temporarily, the southern hemisphere is going to be a lot safer than the northern hemisphere. But then we got the game of politics in here, right?
Sure.
If you can get down there and then be allowed to get into Australia right now, they're basically, you know, take it 5 years or 8 years to get up to it. But there's, you know... It's funny on how you work it all the way. I like Ecuador because it's high in the mountains and they got plenty of free water and there's 9 million people and they've got every plant in the world grows there. The average temperature where I like over there, day or night, is 70 degrees.
Are you planning on leaving the country then pretty soon?
If I get a chance, that's where I'm going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what, this is the plan. If Israel gets hit with a nuke, the next plane I got is going to be to Ecuador.
Ecuador, huh?
Well, I have stuff in Costa Rica too, but that's in the northern hemisphere. And Costa Rica's, they've changed around, they're pretty good. Panama's got places, but remember, that's kind of a runoff between things. So
mm-hmm.
Everybody has to go where you can be able to live and exist and do things. My friends, I got a lot of friends that have moved down to Ecuador because of me. I mean, you know, Brown O'Leary, the Apollo astronaut.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I financed him down there, too. You know, he died, but his wife's still down there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, George, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I think your information is just fantastic, and it's just a real privilege to chat with you. I can't believe the whole hour is up. Are there any closing thoughts you would like to leave with our listeners? Tell people again about your website and your books. For sure.
Well, that's the best thing. Yeah, go to my website, nohoax.com. My name's George Green. You can just type in George Green on Google or YouTube or anything. You can see a lot of the pictures and stuff. You can see me, and I don't look any different. I was just talking to the doctor yesterday. I don't look any different than I did 40 years ago, believe it or not.
That's great. That's a good thing.
But, so that's the way it is. I'm out, and frankly, in 2 weeks, I'll be out of the country anyway. So But I'm out for, I don't know how long I'm going to be. I'm sitting there talking to my son about that, because I don't know where I'm going to. It's coming up pretty quick right now.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for sharing this information with us, and best of luck with everything, and thanks so much.
Make your listeners have good luck, too. And if they need any questions, have them call you in or just let me know. I'll be glad to answer anything, within reason.
Sure. Thanks, George.
Okay.
Have a good
day. Thank you.
Bye-bye.